Hollywood Live Extra with Tanya Hart.
My guest today is someone I've known for a very long time. You know him as the man who founded Black Entertainment Television. Yep, I'm talking about the one and only Bob Johnson. Well, these days, the media mogul is focusing on another critical issue for Black America, reparations. Robert L. Johnson says because of slavery, every Black person in America is owed at least $340,000, and he's got a plan. Bob, welcome to Hollywood Live Extra. How are you?
Tanya, I'm good. Thanks for arranging for me to talk with you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, here's the ironic thing, Bob, and we've kind of always been like this. I don't know if you realize, it was on June 9th, which is, we're actually recording this today on June 9th in 1989, when the late Representative John Conyers actually put out a bill to form a commission to do a study to develop a reparations plan for America. So, and here we are on June 9th in 2020, and now Bob Johnson has picked up that baton and moved on with it. So let's just, first of all, for anybody who doesn't really understand what reparations are, could you just give us a kind of a brief description of what reparations really means?
Well, let me try to make it so people can understand in their everyday lives what reparations is. If you had a home, and someone broke into your house, took all your personal possessions, attacked you, and left with everything that you hold dear in your life, and for years after that attack, you were unable to get back on your feet. You couldn't. You lost the money that they stole, which prevented you from buying a new home. Your damages that took place in your home, you couldn't afford to repair it. So you suffered from that incident. And under normal circumstances, what you would do, you would go to the courts and say, I've been damaged. I've been hurt. This is what happened to me. I didn't do anything. This was forced on me, and I want damages. And you would file a suit, and the court would look at it and say you were entitled to damages. It could be monetary damages because your house was destroyed, your car was stolen, and it could be emotional damage because you were terrified, traumatized by someone doing this in a country where you thought you had, that you deserved to be treated equally. And so you would say, I want to be made whole. And whole would be in the form of monetary damages. That's what reparations is. If you take that same analogy and take it back to slaves, brought here against their will, brutally treated in slavery, after slavery entered into Jim Crow segregation, lynched, denied equal rights in housing and property and staying at restaurants and hotels, denied access to capital, inability to buy homes, send their kids off to college to better their lives. Police brutality continued as a way of protecting white property from from the things that you hold dear. If you were in the wrong neighborhood during Jim Crowism, you would be basically arrested by the police just for being in the wrong part of town. You didn't belong there. And so you add all of that up, that is reparations. It is saying that you are entitled to damage from the society that imposed those negative consequences on your life to be treated equally.
And here's the interesting thing about all this, Bob. You know, the Japanese got reparations in 1988 under the Civil Liberties Act for the time they spent in the internment camps here in this country. And good for them. I don't deny anybody anything that they're owed, but we're talking about 401 years there. So what, first of all, why did we not pick up on this in 88? I find it interesting. I'm just now looking at, in 1988, Japanese get reparations. 1989, John Conyers comes out and says, okay, we're going to do a study on this. And it took until George Floyd's death, almost, for people to first of all realize, oh, there's police brutality in the Black community. So what is it that
Well, Tanya, I think that is the quintessential question. And the fact of it is, white America is incapable of admitting to themselves the horror, the sin, the denial of equal rights that they have visited upon black people. Because the political parties fear that if they were to atone and make whole financially black people, the parties would oppose it and they would lose power. It is clearly a cost-benefit analysis. They look at this and they say, we have the black vote. This is a Democratic Party. We have the black vote. They aren't pushing or threatening us with walking away from us if we don't do it. And the white part of our party is not demanding that we do it, because if we did it, we'd lose the other part of the party. We'd be left with just the black vote and a few white, what I call 21st century abolitionist types. The Republican Party look at it and say, none of our people want to give black people reparations in the form of financial payments. So why should we do it? And we have no black support causing us to say, why not you consider this and we can talk? So at the end of the day, white America, there is no white people out there today marching for reparations the way they're marching for the late George Floyd. Because monetary power, when given to black people, is something in their mind far different than giving them police protection. And white America, in their DNA, they are incapable of admitting to the original sin of slavery and beyond, and then from that, making black people whole by giving them equal wealth that can forever free black people from being an appendage of one party and ignored by the other party. It's as simple as that.
It's not the cost at all. Yeah, but former Vice President Biden, who is now obviously going to be the Democratic nominee, came out, I believe, yesterday, and you were supporting him. He said, the bottom line is this: until there's a genuine economic justice, access to wealth, it's not going to fundamentally change police practices. And you said that you're pleased to hear the former vice president say that. Give me a little bit more.
I was not only pleased, I was shocked. And Tanya, you're very intellectual on matters. You mentioned the Japanese internment. You know the history, and you mentioned John Conyers, the issue of reparations. Tanya, I'd ask you to sort of go into your knowledge bank. Have you ever heard a white president, forget a white president, a white person, say that the key to economic justice is access to the word wealth? I've heard access to jobs. I've heard access to education. I've heard access to housing. I have never heard the word access of wealth. And so your viewers will understand, if you look at wealth, the reason I came up with the $350,000 to go to every 40 million black Americans descended of slaves is because it would take $350,000 in access to capital to get black Americans equal in wealth to median white families. And so that's why I said to the vice president, I hope he takes it to the next level, because it is wealth that determines in a capitalistic society how you position yourself in terms of stature, competence, control, access to rights. All of that comes in a capitalist society based on wealth. And so, to me, it was fascinating to hear him talk about wealth. Now, this is a guy who back in the day said, I'll be damned if I will ever give a penny to anybody who I never did anything wrong to when asked about reparations. Mm-hmm. And so it's a monumental leap if you believe it to be true. But if you go to that video that was put out with his interview on The Shade Room, and Tanya, you read it correctly, and I put out a press release about it. He said exactly that.
Yep. But that's what he said.
That's where we are. But see, the way I looked at it, the way I came up with that that 14 trillion, and people say, wow, that's a big number. Well, it's really not a big number. It's not a big number.
No, it's not.
Because you think about it. Here's what white America provides to black Americans, and they do it with, you know, okay, that's okay, we'll do that. You ask them for food stamps. Most food stamp money as a percentage goes mm-hmm. to black people. Oh, we'll give them food stamps. Check that box. And you say, welfare. Oh, of course, we'll give them welfare. Check that box. Oh, how about low-income housing projects? Oh, check that box. Sure, we'll give them low-income housing programs. We'll check that box. Well, you will give them the tax deduction for unearned income tax. They don't make enough money to pay taxes, so we'll assume they don't pay taxes, but we'll give them money because it's an unearned tax credit. Check that box. They will do everything to implement paternalistic programs that allow them to control you. But if you ask them to give them cash, if you ask them to give you cash, money where you are in control of your destiny, they won't do it. And I'll just say this and let you ask another question. I was on a show talking about this with a white interviewer, and I told him about the cash money, that I didn't want programs like I just described. I wanted cash.
Right.
His question to me, Tanya, was, well, Bob, are you going to give them education on how to manage their money? Are you going to give the money to them without them having financial literacy training? I'm saying this is the problem.
That's the
problem.
White
people are going to have money, and everybody is confident they're going to go out and buy a nice
Thank
house.
You.
They're going to send their kids to college. They're going to keep their neighborhood stable. They're going to be investing in business entrepreneurs. But the white American thought pattern in their DNA is, you give black people money, they don't know how to handle it. They're going to waste it. They're going to spend it on going to the liquor store. They're going to throw it away. It's that negative DNA about African Americans having the ability to decide their own destiny is what makes Joe Biden, we're talking about VP Biden, say on The Breakfast Club, is if you even have to think about whether or not you're going to vote for me or not, you ain't black. The arrogance of a white person to tell you that your thought pattern cannot deviate from voting for a 74-year-old white man.
That
is what keeps black people from being treated equally in a society, because nobody believes we have the ability to decide for ourselves.
Now you are okay. Let's pick up on that thought, because right now they're talking about dismantling police departments. Here in Los Angeles, the mayor has said he's going to take $150 million out of the police budget here. And this is happening all over the country. People are saying, okay, we're going to put this into, as you said, those programs back in the community. I'm with you. We don't need another program. We need this cash. So all of that being said, as the police departments are changing or being dismantled, or the budgets of money is being moved around for another program, isn't this some money that right now we ought to maybe go and say, you know what? Forget the programs. Let's take that $150 million here in Los Angeles and start this reparation.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, the mayor of L.A. would never say, we're going to tear down the gates in Bel Air. We don't need the gates in Bel Air because, you know, there's not going to be any crime there. We don't need a problem. In fact, to help the people in Bel Air, we're going to give them social programs. We're going to build swimming pools in Bel Air.
Right.
We're going to provide, you know, nice, clean streets, and the garbage collectors are going to pick up the street all the time. We're going to help the people in Bel Air go to school. The reason they don't do that is because the people in Bel Air have money. They don't need
they
the
don't
police
need it.
To be there. They got a 20-foot-high gate, and they got a guard gate there. And so my thing is, you dismantle the police and say we're going to do social programs, The only reason you need the social programs and the police is because black people don't have money to create a stable society where the husband and the wife now are comfortable that they got enough wealth to stay together for their family. They don't divorce. You don't get this single, huge single family female-headed mm-hmm. household because people now have pride. The husband goes to work, he comes back with pride. The husband is an investor, is an entrepreneur, he's got pride. They don't fight over the poverty issues confronting him, and they stay together.
That's true.
These are all things that white America has. And so if white America wants to say, we are not white supremacists, write a check. And let me tell you what, so you're mm-hmm. clear about reparations proposal I put on the table. It's over 30 years that white Americans would pay each African-American descendant of slaves, some 40 million, $357,000. That amounts to about, over 30 years, $11,000 a year to be paid to by over 30 years. At the end of 30 years, it would sunset. And the other thing, if you do the math down, you take the total number of taxpayers, about 170, 80 million people who pay taxes. When you break that down to how much they'd have to give on a daily basis, it's $8 a day.
Okay.
From all the taxpayers, if you give $8 a day over mm-hmm. 30 years, it would equal $14 trillion.
So there's the money. We know, Bob, if anybody knows how to find the money, how to do that.
And white people
successful.
Know they have the money because the net worth of a median income white family is $170,000. The median net worth of an African-American household is $17,000. So those people who understand medians and means, that means 50% of black people have more than $17,000. 50% of black people have less than $17,000. So that means 20 million African Americans out of 40 million have less than $17,000 in income. And all we're asking white people to do is just pay $8 a day, every taxpayer, $8 a day for the next 30 years that would be distributed to 40 million African-American descendants of brutal slavery, Jim Crow segregation, denial of economic rights, police brutality, police murder. You keep going. That's all we're asking. White Americans can't do that. They will love to get out and march and protest this. Ask them to give what they regard more precious in a capitalist society than anything else, than their sort of assuaging of their guilt from white supremacy is cash. Mm-hmm. I have never heard one liberal white person say, you know what? Bob is right. Let's stop putting out these posts on the internet and Instagram and everything else. Let's go what we value more than anything else. Money. Because that's how we decide how popular, how dynamic we are. Money. They put out the Forbes 400 list of the wealthiest white people. They put out all these lists about how much wealth people have. Ask them for money. Don't give it to the, fine. If you want to give money to the Urban League, give it. You want to give it money to the
and that's what they're doing. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening right now.
Give this money to Mrs. Jones. So Mrs. Jones don't have to worry about whether or not she can pay for early childhood education or a babysitter while she works. Mrs. Jones don't have to worry about whether or not she can fix her house when the house needs to be fixed. Give Mrs. Jones $350,000 over the next 30 years so she's equal to her white counterpart. And I guarantee you, people who are industrious, as black people are, people who have a strong moral fiber, as black people do from their church-going experience to their beliefs, to people who want to succeed more than any other population in the country. More importantly, and last thing I'll say on this, there are no more people in the world who are as forgiving for past transgressions than black people.
Oh, that's so true.
And if white people would just have the guts to say we're sorry, We want to atone. We want to give you $8 a day for the next 30 years. Black people would sing hallelujah because that's what they want. All you got to do is remember what happened in Charleston, South Carolina. Man walks in, kills 9 black people in a church.
Right.
Black people go to make a statement as victims before the sentencing. The first thing out of their mouth is, you know, to the murderer.
I forgive him.
We forgive
you. I forgive you. We forgive you.
The same thing happened. The black woman, the police woman, walks into the wrong house, thinks she's in her house, in the black man's house, kills the black man. The first thing the black man's brother says is to the judge, "Your Honor, can I go over and hug her?"
And give her a hug. I know that moment will stay in my mind forever. You are so right. Everybody, you're listening to Hollywood Live Extra. I'm Tanya Hart, talking to Bob Johnson, longtime friend. And Bob, you know, this is obviously a conversation. And if there's anybody else in America, any other black person in America, you're the one to do this because you really did. You've always been concerned about the black community. Not only that, you created Black Entertainment Television, which for the last 40 years has employed black people. And given black folks, you know, I mean, obviously you don't own it now, but it really gave a lot of people their start. My first big show was on your network. So we appreciate you for that. So in going forward, I mean, at least here's the good news. Joe Biden has said this. You've come out and said that you can really appreciate him saying this. When he is elected, because whatever happens here, Donald Trump has got to be herded out of the White House. When Joe Biden is elected, I would expect that perhaps, why doesn't he put you in his cabinet? And then maybe we can get this done. Should we? Is that where we want to go with this? Is that what you would like to do?
I don't want to work for the government, so that proposal is out. But your proposal is to your listeners, your many listeners, is this. Don't wait until he's in the White House, because at that point he's got your vote. He's got the power of the president. You've got to go to Vice President Biden's campaign and the vice president himself. Put this in the platform at the convention.
Yep. Okay.
That your position of access to wealth, he said it like you said it is, you know, the bottom line is, unless you have access to equal justice is a synonym for reparations. Equal justice is the same thing. For economic justice, he said economic justice is the same as reparations. And then he went on to saying access to wealth. And you don't get wealth. You can get, when you have a job, you have income. Wealth is when you, and trust me, I know, wealth is when you're making money when you sleep.
That's the difference between passive income and wealth. Right. And
that's
wealth.
What white
I call it
people
passive
have.
Income.
They take their money, they invest in the stock market, they invest in hedge funds, they invest it in bonds. They are making money when they are asleep. They buy businesses and companies. And we're the biggest consumers in terms of how much we spend for the consumption.
Yes, we are.
And the final thing I would say on this, and what white people, they understand it, they know it, and because I have an understanding of business and economics and monetary policy, they understand that black people are the highest consumers in the country, which means literally they spend more of their money on consumption and less on saving. That's why we're undersaved in retirement income, and we're underinvested in the stock market because we spend it on immediate material consumption. So if white people, and they know this, if they were to admit it, they know that of that $14 trillion, Tanya, over 30 years, 80% of it would go right back into white businesses.
That's true. I mean, that's the other side of this that we haven't even gotten to. Bob, you know, we, like I said, we love and appreciate you. We're going to continue this conversation. I know you'll be around and ready, and I'm so certain that, you know, you've been in the press a lot this week and last week talking about this. So this is not a conversation that's going to go away, just like I do believe that the protests aren't going away. I mean, they're all over the world. Everybody is saying, George Floyd's name. Now we're going to add to his name. Let's put reparations behind that. And not only that, just so everybody knows, we're about to show Dark Passages again that Bob and we did that back in 1990. It's about the Atlantic slave trade and how this actually happened. So looking forward to that. We'll work that out as well, Bob. But thank you so much. And we do appreciate you.
Please invite me back. I'd love to keep this going. But
we are.
I would say for all of the things that we have to do politically, my favorite word in terms of a song from the great Bob Marley is song Redemption Song, which basically talks about what we faced over the years in terms of slavery to where we are today. Is one phrase and one lyric in that song, it says, and this is something black people need to embrace now and forever. It says, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Only mm-hmm. ourselves can free our mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we need to be. If anything that I say, George Floyd's memory should embrace, emancipate ourselves from the mental slavery that keeps us under the control of an oppressive system that for over 300 plus years have professed equality but have denied us equality.
Oh, but we're going to get it now. I'm so sure. Bob Johnson, thank you. Come back anytime. In fact, we may call you soon because we are going to keep this going. This is something that that I've always been a proponent of. And, you know, obviously you have too, and you've done very well. We've all been blessed, but we need our reparations. I'm just going to put it out there. We need reparations because you're right. We will not be on an equal
reparations plane. Is monetary. That's make you whole. That's what you call damages for what you suffered. But the thing that I believe and the thing that I have said most of all is reparations is not just for the atonement of past sins, but making, you know, sort of making you whole. But really, and I think white America needs this as much, if not more, than black America. But it is to cause the nation to live up to what was once called and what once we all believe was something called American exceptionalism. That we are so mm-hmm. great a nation that we can be exceptional beyond all other nations on the globe. That was something that, you know, the so-called greatest generation went to war for.
Yeah.
But today, we are not an exceptional nation, and we never will be, as long as we are incapable of apologizing and atoning for sin that has been the stain on this nation since its founding. And so that's what I say. I call American to embrace American exceptionalism. But
okay, that sounds like a good plan. So, Bob, again, we're going to call you back because you know what else we want to get into, and we don't have enough time right now. But, you know, looking at the reconciliation that they did in South Africa when that changed over. So that's another topic that kind of fits into this. In the meantime.
That's a good topic to discuss because it goes with what I believe from a historical standpoint of view. You know, the argument, the theory goes like this. There are no such thing as great men. There are great events that ordinary men rise up to challenge. President Mandela was an ordinary man who rose to a great challenge. And when he walked out of Robben's Island prison, the first thing he did, you want to talk about atonement, the first person he invited to his inauguration was the jail guard who watched over him for some, you know, 15 plus years in Robben's Island.
There you have it.
That's the ability to face up to something that he knew that unless white Afrikaners and black Africans, South Africans, could come to some level of forgiveness and atonement, that nation was doomed.
Yep.
And he did that, recognize that. White America.
And he stepped up in it, yeah. And that's what white
America recognize that. Black leaders need to recognize that, not block themselves into one party. be a balance of power between both parties and make both parties stand up for what is right and what is in the best interest of Black Americans. And so, yeah, I'd love to talk about it anytime you want.
Okay, we'll call you back. Thank you so much, Bob. And for everybody else out there listening, don't forget to download and subscribe to the AURN app. Also, you can find Hollywood Live Extra on SoundCloud, Stitcher, or any other podcast directory. Make sure you download all of these because you don't want to miss any of them. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review. I'm Tanya Hart. This is Hollywood Live Extra.
Hollywood Live Extra, a product of American Urban Radio Networks.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.